Welcome to The Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for The Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Yancey Roy, a man with two first names. Maybe his first name should be his second name. But anyway, Yancey Roy is a terrific reporter, the Albany Bureau Chief for New York Newsday. And welcome, Yancey.
Thanks, Alan.
It's good to see you again. You've always been a terrific correspondent for us, and you know an awful lot about what's going on in Albany. Well, let's talk first about ethics reform. We're getting a visit here from Preet Bharara, who's going to come and talk to us for an hour. We're going to play it live and the rest of it. How important do you think Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, turns out to be in the ethics of Albany?
Well, he certainly had the most impact of any one individual. And as you know, and as people who follow it, it's well documented that he's brought a number of cases against state legislators. Most recently, the most high profile ones, he got convictions of the two guys who a year ago, when we were sitting here, were the two most powerful men in the state legislature, Dean Skelos and Sheldon Silver. And he is continuing to pursue other cases. It's been well reported that he has subpoenaed records related to what's called the Buffalo Billion, the big, massive development project out in Buffalo that involves a solar panel factory, among other things.
In which there was some discussion as to whether or not it was a pay-to-play game. In other words, you had to make a contribution, then there was a request for proposals that only one company who had been a giver could be matched.
Yeah, only Preet Bharara knows for sure what they're looking at, but that was sort of the smoke around the issue, was that the way the request for proposals was written, it seemed to eliminate almost everyone. It had some sort of provision that said only construction companies that had been doing business in Buffalo for 50 years or more could apply. And when it was flagged by media out there, they changed it to 15 years
and said,
it was a mistake. And, you know,
yeah.
Go try to explain that to some guy getting coffee at Stewart's shops and see
15, they all sound the same. Yeah.
But who knows where that's going? It's also interesting. He's coming up here. He's coming to WAMC's Performing Arts Center. He's also going to address the New York Conference of Mayors.
Sure.
So it's a two-stop performance, and yet he is not speaking directly to the legislature. As you may know, he went to Kentucky and spoke to state legislators there about ethics. The interesting backdrop is he's got at least one case we know about. He said, stay tuned about other cases. And at the same time, let's keep in mind, he was appointed by President Obama, whose last year ends at this calendar year. Most often, U.S. attorneys leave when the president who appointed them leaves. So he's also sort of on a timeline here. How many cases is Bharara going to continue to pursue in what's now probably less than a year left in his tenure as U.S. attorney?
Well, yes, Your Honor, let me take you up on that. It seems to me that if Hillary Clinton wins, it won't matter because he can stay as long as he likes because the senior senator of the same party gets to appoint. And we know, as we say in the business, that his rabbi is, of course, Chuck Schumer.
His former employer.
So the chances are, if he really wants to stay in that job, he could stay as long as he likes.
That's the question. Does he want to stay?
Yes, it is.
You know, there's some history that suggests a lot of U.S. attorneys move on after a certain point. Not all of them stay forever. But yes, if Hillary Clinton wins, if Preet Bharara wants to stay, that would be an avenue that could be open to him.
Would you see Preet Bharara as a possible attorney general of the United States?
I don't see how you wouldn't necessarily rule it out. I mean, I don't know who, again, we're getting way ahead looking into 17, but I don't know who they necessarily would want to pick. Let's say Hillary Clinton wins. It's possible he could be a candidate. I mean, Loretta Lynch is also from New York and also hasn't been on that job all that long. She hasn't had that long of a stretch in the job. Maybe they keep her. Maybe they decide to keep Loretta Lynch as the U.S. attorney. There's a lot of dominoes to fall depending on the outcome of the federal elections.
Interesting. So, as you suggest, both the Speaker, Sheldon Silver, and the former Majority Leader, Dean Skelos, are out. How important is that?
Well, it's very important in the sense that two things. One is the personalities of the folks are gone. Sheldon Silver had kept what had many had regarded was sort of an iron grip on the state assembly. He's now replaced by Carl Hastie. He's less than a year into his tenure. He is making an effort at this point to hear more from rank-and-file members, and they say they appreciate it. Of course, the caveat there, Alan, is every new leader that comes in is often praised for listening to rank-and-file. That's the same thing that happened with Joe Bruno way back in 1994 when he came in as Senate leader. The rank-and-file senator said, oh, breath of the fresh air. The previous leader had stopped listening to us.
Ralph Mumbles Marino.
Yeah. 14 years later, when Bruno leaves, he was subject to the same complaints. Oh, he doesn't listen to us anymore. He does his own thing. And it's nice to have Dean Skelos, who's now there listening to us. Sort of a pattern that happens with leaders. And also with Dean Skelos leaving the Senate, not only is there a new leader, John Flanagan, also of Long Island, but his seat, Dean Skelos' seat, which is vacant, is now, at the moment, the hottest contested seat in the state legislature. Everyone is expecting a special election. Governor Cuomo has suggested he will call one for April 19th. That's not official yet, but if he's still leaning towards that date, the legal window to call that election starts next week. The Democrats have already lined up a candidate. The Republicans have been going through about six or seven names so far to try to focus on one. And the reason why this is important, as you know, is that the Republicans have a one-seat majority in the state Senate right now. Now, they also have a coalition with some breakaway Democrats that help them.
Who some people, me, call the traitors. These are the guys who used to be Democrats who thought that their interests were better served by coalescing with and collaborating, if you want to prefer a better word, with the Republicans in the Senate. So even though there's a one-vote majority, they could still have enough to maintain their power.
They call themselves the Independent Democratic Caucus, not the
traitors. I call them traitors.
But what will happen, and what's important, is, again, we look ahead to this special election and then the fall, and the Democrats are expecting a big turnout this year. If the Democrats win...
Because of Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
If the Democrats in the Senate win a majority, will there be so much pressure on this breakaway caucus to come back to the fold?
Except Yancey Roy, the interesting name, there are two words which it seems to me define this whole issue as to whether the what you call the special caucus or I call the traitors come back to the Democrats, which they ran as, and those two words are Andrew Cuomo. Now, Andrew Cuomo says he wants a Democratic Senate, but most of us don't believe that. So, or many of us don't believe it anyway. So then the question is, does that happen? Will Cuomo say to those guys, bring in the leader of the group, Jeff Klein, and say, hey, Jeff, you're going to go back to where you belong?
Well, in 2014, Cuomo had promised to try to help the Democrats regain the Senate, and yet was seen as not really doing much at all.
Some people see that as lying, but go ahead.
So here we are now in 16, and the question might be, has the playing field change. Look at Andrew Cuomo's policy direction in the last 2-3 years. It has definitely gone to the left.
How come?
There's a lot of speculation on that. He has always been an astute observer of the political trends. Maybe, you know, after fighting with the left for the first couple of years, he is now making amends with labor unions.
Teachers.
Sort of tried to make peace with teachers. He's now on board with a minimum wage hike, which he hadn't been before. You know, is this a signal of where he wants to head? And if so, is that a signal of where he might want the state Senate to go in a couple of years, at least after this year's election?
Interesting. So a lot of people are speculating, as you just sort of surmised, that Cuomo may be doing this for his political future. And if you walk around Albany and talk to people, the only thing that they really want to talk about is whether Andrew will do a third term, whether he'll run for a third term. I've always believed there is no question he's going to run for a third term. Do you hear anything else?
Well, keep in mind that if you are the sitting governor,
sure,
you always say that you're planning on running again, because right, the moment that you say you're not, you become a lame duck and any of your initiatives will just, you know, hit a brick wall. So even if we'll play along with this, let's play along that Andrew Cuomo decides not to run for a third term. When does he say that? Probably not till about the beginning of 2018. Right. I mean, 2 years from now. So for now, we have to figure that he is planning on doing a third term. And as far as his political future, you know, he has been talked about since his first couple of years in office about whether he would have national ambitions. Run for president.
Does the duck swim in the water?
Try to, you know, become part of an administration. I mean, that would also go into what happens this year, why this fall's elections are so critical on many levels, might have an impact on what he decides his political future is if a Democrat wins the presidency or if a Republican wins the presidency.
Are you looking, Yancey Roy, for anything specific to come out of the legislature as it meets now?
In terms of this year's agenda, I think, frankly, we're looking at kind of a low-energy session this year. It's an election year for the 213 members of the state legislature. Historically, what does that mean? It means let's have a nice, gentle session, no big arguments.
Go quietly into the night.
Go quietly and get back and run for re-election. And right now, I think that's sort of on pace for that. There's no huge arguments that look like will be intractable. I know there's debate about the minimum wage. The governor wants it all the way up to 15. The Republicans say we can't go that far. But notably, they haven't said no way. They haven't said no way. They're open to discussion. So I think that there's no immediate sort of intractable issues for the governor and the legislators right now.
Interesting. Now, my very good friend Rex Smith, who is the, for those who are listening, the editor of the Albany Times-Union, a very powerful paper around this section of the country, is furious because the Cuomo manipulated Jay Cope. Some people call it Jay Joke, which he's appointed to be the ethics watchdog, and it hasn't really been satisfying to a lot of people. Want to require reporting of contacts between lobbyists and editorial boards. Now, this is obviously a sharp knife into the guts of the press, who are always trying to find more information out about what politicians are doing. So now Cuomo really ticks off my friend Rex and everybody else by saying, hey, if a lobbyist goes to an editorial board, that should be reported. And, you know, in a state that is beset by corruption, New York's Ethics Commission votes to chill public debate through the media. You know, maybe this is one of those third world Latin American countries, maybe, but I don't quite understand what the governor thinks he's doing here.
Well,
assuming that the governor, of course, I should say, is behind all these moves. And I know him well enough to know pretty much that he is.
Well, let's take it from the top. The governor has 14. There are 14 members to the ethics panel. The governor appoints a majority of those.
Right.
It's also staffed by former employees of Cuomo, either at the AG or at the governor's office. But the governor's office says we don't control the ethics panel. Okay,
yeah, right.
Take that as a starting point.
Yeah, right.
And again, we'll take it there, the initiative from the first viewpoint that the panel presents it, which is the idea here is that if there is a paid consultant, lobbyist, PR consultant, whatever, who is being paid money to try to influence the outcome of state laws, that should be reported. Now, where you get into the tricky point is what is influence and who are you trying to influence? And for the longest time, that has come to be viewed as influence the guys who actually make the laws, state legislators, the governor, et cetera. And it seems to me what they're doing here is taking a broader definition of what they consider influence and extending it to the media and saying that, well, if you try to influence the media, you're also in trying to influence public policy, which, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Why do you conduct?
One's a governmental group and the other
exactly.
Is.
Exactly. We, as journalists, we don't make the laws. We report. Yeah. Report news. But in the end, we don't make the laws. So how can conversations with us or editorial boards be seen in the same light as conversations with state legislators, the people who actually make the laws?
And it seems to me that the lobbyists, for the most part, are people who are going to have to register anyway, you know, in order so that we can go to the lobbying commission or whatever and look them up.
Right. They would register. The question here is, once you register, what do you have to report?
Sure.
Do you have to report spending on lobby campaigns, or do you have to report every single conversation? And then that gets into really murky territory. What's a conversation to influence? I see a lot of potential problems with trying to discern that.
I think it's disgusting. Let's talk a little bit about Janet DeFiore as the new chief judge. What's her background? What's her relationship with the governor? Why did he choose her?
We'll go backwards. He knows her, and by many accounts, he trusts her. Janet DeFiore was the Westchester County District Attorney. She's also had time as a state judge. So she does have a lot of background in the world of courts and criminal justice. She also was the initial chairwoman of the ethics panel, which we just discussed, J-COPE, as it's the shorthand is. She led it through the first couple of years, a very rocky tenure, getting that
they
panel
hardly
started.
Distinguished themselves during that time.
You know, it's interesting, for what it's worth, if you recall the name Ravi Batra, who was an initial member of the ethics panel, who resigned because he said there was a lack of independence by the commission
from the governor.
The governor's office. We called him up when Janet DeFiore was nominated and said, what do you think? And he said he had no problem with Ms. Fiore. He said that he thought that the problems at J-COPE weren't a Janet DeFiore problem, but a lack of independence from the governor's office by the staff. So he actually praised Janet DeFiore. She's going to be...
He's not stupid.
He is still a working attorney, yeah. She will be the second woman to ever be the chief judge on the state Court of Appeals. And it's going to be interesting. The governor now has appointed 6 of the 7 judges who are on the Court of Appeals. What's the impact? Well, it's probably a little too early to say. There haven't been enough cases under the judge's belt, so to speak, to sort of figure out a direction on this court. Many expect it to move to the left over time, and that's something we'll probably see play out in the next 2-3 years.
Well, you know, the real question to me is, will the judges on the Court of Appeals, our highest court, have the guts to go against the governor since he appointed them? Will they have the cojones that are necessary to do this kind of work? I mean, Yancey, for all of these years, who has done the indicting? Who has done of the state legislators? Look, there's some local, but for the most part, it's been the federal prosecutor. It's an inside game here in New York. So I'm a little worried about the way in which the Court of Appeals is going to go on all this.
Well, you know, what's interesting is Governor Pataki, who served 12 years and had appointed almost all of the judges by the time he was done. You might recall Al Rosenblatt, a judge from Dutchess County.
Brilliant, wonderful man and a listener to this radio show.
He turned out being, let's maybe call him the judge suitor of New York's highest court, in that he was appointed by a Republican, but on some really important and controversial cases, he ended up voting with the Democrats, most notably the so-called Campaign for Fiscal Equity case, which was about the balance of school funding. And you look at him and you recall Al Rosenblatt and you say, is there going to be an Al Rosenblatt among the Democratic judges that Governor Cuomo has appointed?
Mm-hmm. But intuitively, I hate to push this way, do you think when a governor appoints a judge that he expects certain things back? Look, the presidents in the Supreme Court, we know 5-4 decisions have become de rigueur up on the United States Supreme Court, and they're very careful about how they vet these people. And so I guess I'm interested in this.
Well, rather than say expect something back, I would say that easily you can say that they certainly expect to know what their tendency is to rule in certain cases and in certain matters and philosophical viewpoints. They don't make these appointments in a vacuum. So I think that they have an expectation of how this judge views legal matters.
Yancey Roy, I wanted to ask you about, we had referred to him earlier in the conversation, but the new speaker, a guy named Carl Hastie, and I call him Boss Hastie because he was the boss of the Bronx before he became the boss of the legislature.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And a couple of cracks occurred early on in his tenure, in which it turned out that he was having his car repairs taken care of, the allegation anyway, both by the money he was getting from the state for the car and another way. So in other words, is this a guy who's going to end up in trouble?
Well, you know, look, he's less than a year into his tenure. And when he was first appointed, reporters certainly dove into his background to find out what there was to know. Besides the story about the car repairs, there was also a story about the handling of his mother's estate after she passed away in the Bronx and how the court handled that. Was it beneficial to the speaker? He said no. You know, there was a little bit of scrutiny there. I think that was part of the normal, what happens when a new speaker comes in and the media decides to take a closer look at someone who before was just a rank and filer and didn't have much influence. That sort of comes with the territory. I think what's going to happen now is this is his first year. And this will be, you know, the time where he decides through his actions and how he handles the chamber and how he handles issues about how he is received and how much success or not he has.
There's a whole lot of ethnic politics that are played in this election process. Of course, Speaker Hastie is a man of color. How important a part do these ethnic politics play in the way in which our contemporary politics in the legislature take place?
Well, I mean, certainly when the state assembly was scrambling to pick a leader once Sheldon Silver had been pushed aside after being indicted, there were a lot of considerations, including, you know, the members of the Black and Hispanic caucus at that time very much were interested in seeing the first African-American speaker in the assembly, which happened when Carl Hastie won the vote. I think that there are always issues, you know, whether it's like bill issues that come up when it's important to a certain group of legislators, you know, to get passed or not is one thing. But I think that most often when you look at these divisions, either whether it's, you know, ethnicity or geography, those often come into play when a leader is chosen and then tend to subside a little bit when you go through the regular session and you're going through regular issues. I think they most crop up exactly when you're picking a leader.
So, look, Yancey Roy, you're a terrific reporter and bureau chief for Newsday. I wanted to ask you very quickly, because we only have about a minute left. You've been around this cesspool for an awful long time. Does the stink ever get to you?
Are you making a personal comment about me? No.
No, I want to know personally whether or not you, who cover this stuff, who I know must feel the same alarm many of us do when some things happen, does it ever get to be too much for you?
No. I mean, you know, you follow the legislature and you realize that there are inevitably there are people who are corrupt. Inevitably, there are people who are indicted and put away. And inevitably, you see a lot of how laws are adopted or not adopted and the backroom maneuvering. And you kind of step back and realize that, you know, for the most part, you're the chronicler here and you're the observer and your role is to detail what goes on and just put it out there for folks to read about and help make their decisions.
Very quickly then, when you do a program here on public radio about chocolate chip cookies, every phone is loaded. When you do something on state government, not so much. The question is...
You tell me what that's about.
Well, you know, I just don't think people know or like or want to associate with state politics.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, most by and large, and I don't think that's just New York. I think that's back in my home state in Louisiana and probably other states. There's a certain minimal attention that the regular average Joe pays to state politics. It's almost like someone who occasionally checks the baseball standings in the morning or the basketball standings and doesn't follow every game and doesn't know all the details, but occasionally looks in on the standings to find out where things are.
Always wonderful to talk to Yancey Roy. And he is, of course, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks so much for joining us. You were terrific.
Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.